Welcome back, everybody, to Inside Texas Baseball. I'm your host, Evan Veith, and of course, joined by Nash Talks Texas. Nash, pretty successful weekend out there in Missouri. How are you doing right now?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, man? I mean, going 4-0, you can't get better than this.
I'm doing good, and of course, fours are aplenty here at Inside Texas because you can get 4 months for $1 here at the best site to get anything Texas sports related. Of course, Longhorn Baseball is doing great right now, but there's so much more to talk about in the Texas sphere. Sean Miller in the transfer portal is big news right now. We've got our own Keenan Womack reporting live on the scene with that. And, of course, spring practice has started. There's no better place in the Texas football sphere or probably the college football world to learn about anything Texas football. So make sure you go over to the Inside Texas website. $1 for 4 months, a deal you can't beat. Nash, we're back here with baseball because what a weekend it was. And, obviously, we have to come to our jobs on Monday, but the Longhorns, they did their jobs this weekend. 3-0 sweep, now 8-1 in SEC play. A little bit of an abbreviated schedule with that Sunday weather stuff. But, yeah, the Longhorns, a Friday win and two wins on Saturday. Friday was a mercy as well. What stood out to you from this weekend's games?
Immediately the depth of this Texas team. We lost some guys like Max Ballou, Rylan Galvan, and Adrian Rodriguez. And we're going to have to wait to see and hear from Jim Schlossnagle on when they're going to come back. I have no idea on the severity of the injuries, but to see, even though this is Missouri, right, to see our guys like Cole Chamberlain come and step up, right? You got guys like Jaquay Stewart who are stepping up in that DH slot. I mean, this is what you're going to need as a Texas team, and to sit there and actually go out there and still run roll team and, you know, actually put up, you know, 7-7-7, right? This is good, and this is exciting stuff to be able to see because, I mean, once you get past your starters, it kind of almost can be a question mark, especially when you have a team that like Jim Schlossnagle, where he doesn't really like to get the – he likes to stick his innings with most of his core guys.
Mm-hmm. And obviously in college baseball, these backups are not going to be seasoned MLB veterans, guys who've been there, done that, maybe are past their prime, but they know the pitching. You're relying on guys like, you know, Cole Chamberlain, a true freshman at catcher, and like you mentioned, Jaquay Stewart had some really good at-bats, hit the ball really hard there. And I think just kind of in a wide view of things, you know, the Longhorns have gone on the road twice now. They also won a series against LSU. They're 8-1 in SEC play. That is tied for first. Arkansas, Georgia, and Tennessee right there. LSU right behind. But and if you told me that 3 weeks into the SEC play or after 3 weeks that Longhorns would be tied for first, I might have called you crazy. You know, I had my own opinions about this team, and I thought they would be good, but maybe not upper echelons of the SEC good. So they're really humming right now. Obviously, Missouri isn't a team that really strikes a lot of fear in some of these other organizations, but you're on the road in the SEC. Similar idea to what we said about Mississippi State. You know, it's not easy to win three straight games, especially when, you know, the elements are against you, and of course the injuries are against you. Max Ballou had injured his wrist on the fly ball. He made a great play on it, but he did get hurt. We, again, don't know much about all these injuries, but that's obviously a big hit. Rylan Galvan on the tip ball behind him. And then Adrian Rodriguez got hit by a pitch. But there's people behind them. That's where you have the guys like Casey Borba and Jaquay Stewart and Cole Chamberlain. So offensively, I thought we got a lot. And I know you're going to want to talk about a guy that you've been hyping up a lot this year who maybe hadn't put the ball over the fence or connected to the perfect spots. But Will Gasparino, what a week for him.
Oh, my God. I mean, you want to talk about going insane. Will Gasparino to hit 5 home runs in a span of three games, it's insane, right? And you think, like, you have to, like, almost, like, check yourself. You're like, yeah. He did hit back-to-back 2 home run games and then hit 1 home run the game before. And then even more insane, when you look at it, 3 of these home runs are a distance of 438 feet, 437 feet, and 430 feet. Like, these are monster shots that – most other, like 99% of other people, if they hit this, if they hit one home run like this, that's like their all time. One that they remember, right? Like
their peak.
That's the one. And it just, and then also one of those home runs, it's like, I wish I sent a screenshot to Homer. The ball is low and outside, mm-hmm. and he's still reaching and hitting it. And that's where Will Gasparino is extremely dangerous because if he's going to consistently play like this and consistently hit like this, man, I mean, this is he's a scary guy at the plate because it's just 6'6", and they might be lying. He might be 6'8".
That'd be taller,
legitimately.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard like he is he's actually taller than.
I have to go like this when we interview him.
I mean, he's just, you call it what it is. Like, I hate to say this because I don't want to, like, this is nothing negative at all. But he's a freak of nature in the best way possible. And I mean, he's been gifted with something that a lot of other people haven't been gifted with. And man, I think we might be able to, if he's consistently hitting like this, we're going to start to see him get intentionally walked a lot.
Yeah. And gifted a lot of wins for Texas baseball if he keeps doing that, because, you know, in the first two series, he had five hits in his first 21 at-bats against Mississippi State and LSU, which is not catastrophic or anything. Had two doubles there, so there was a little bit of flash power, but 6-for-12 against Missouri. Two of those six hits were home runs. Had 8 RBI on Friday. Was pretty much the whole offense in a mercy rule game. Just an elite showing of bat speed, an elite showing of power. And this is, we've talked to people on our board about, you know, has Gasparino been disappointing? Has this been not what we wanted from this great center fielder? And I think more than anything, he's been good up until this. The rest of the team has been better than you thought. So maybe he's not the third best player on this team. Maybe he's a little bit behind what Ethan Mendoza was doing, what Ryan Galvan was doing. But after that, after this weekend, he's one of the most dangerous hitters in the SEC, and was touted as, I think he won the SEC Player of the Week, if I'm not mistaken. Let me make sure I get that right. SEC Player of the Week. And that's an award he deserves because of how well he hit this game. And like you said earlier, when there's players down like Ballew, like Galvan, like Rodriguez, it's not just the depth needs to step up, guys like Winfield or Chamberlain or Stewart, whoever. It's also the players that were already in starting spots that need to step up and already there to win you games. And Jalen Flores did the same thing. Will Gasparino did the same thing. I thought those two played really well this weekend. So a really good offensive weekend from the Longhorns overall. On the pitching side of things, Ruger Rios.
I also want to say, speaking of Jalen Flores, it's like, he's got to be sitting there going, what the heck, man? I just had a three-game home run. Three-game streak where I hit a home run each game, and it just gets completely overshadowed by Will Gasparino
right.
having an amazing weekend. And then again, also, like, you've always seen that this potential's there with Will Gasparino. It was a matter of – and it still is. It's a matter of, can he consistently do it? And I think that's the scary thing, is if he is starting to consistently put this together, man. This is going to be fun to watch. But, yeah, moving on to the pitching.
Yeah, and you see, of course, he also plays good defense, which is an important part for when
– elite defense.
Like Ruger Riojas, who is the SEC co-pitcher of the week, great outing on Sunday. And I know you wrote an article about this, but that Sunday starter spot, is that his to lose? What do you think is going to happen there? Because he's been pitching lights out.
I think that no matter – like if we're 2-0, obviously, and we don't have – if we haven't used Ruger Riojas, yeah, he's for sure going to go in. I think the only way that we use Ruger Riojas is on a Saturday if we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, he's shown, like, to have three weekend starters in the SEC, like, that's something special that you don't just take for granted, right? And that's where I struggle with this, is because he is – without a doubt, one of our best guys to come in with the, you know, with the game on the line.
With leverage, yeah.
And the way – I think the best way to look at this is I think he's probably late in the year is going to turn into almost like a Lucas Gordon, where he's an elite starting pitcher. But if we need that – if we need to stop something right now, right? You just put in what's clutch, right? You don't worry about that. Maybe Max Grubb has been burned. And then that's the thing, is I think that the coaching staff is going to try to use guys like Max Grubb. They're going to try to use some other guys. Or maybe even, you know, I hate to say this, but like if the game's like kind of out of like touch, right? You know, maybe they give some other guys some innings that, hey, if our offense wakes up, good, we're in the game, right? But let's just try and get these other guys some innings, right? That they're good pitchers, right? We don't want to let runs get scored on us, obviously. But I think they are going to try and save him, for later on Saturday or that Sunday spot. Because at the end of the day, you just want, especially with like some of the opponents that we got coming up, like Georgia and Arkansas, winning just one of those games would be a massive deal.
And I agree with what we've talked about with the leverage. It's not going to be on Friday because you do have Volantis and Grubbs who you're going to go to anyway. And if Spencer Volantis, Grubbs aren't going to get you within striking distance in the game, then adding Riojas isn't going to help to that. But, yeah, if it's a Saturday game, Harrison may have gotten chased early, but you've gotten some good innings out of other people, and you're up one eighth inning, you're not going to lose that game just to, you know, have Rio Haas be able to pitch on Sunday. But for those who missed it this Sunday, 7 innings of 2-hit, 10 strikeout ball for Rio Haas, really showing the K pitches that maybe you were hoping would show up a little bit later. He always had that strike throwing ability, good locations, but he was really dotting it up and getting swings and misses, which I thought was a big expansion of his game and something really important.
Zero bases on balls, too. Mm-hmm. Like, this is elite stuff. Like, this is, like, elite SEC stuff. And I'll have to look and see where he's draft eligible. But, man, this is the type of stuff that it's fun to be able to watch at the University of Texas. And, you know that these types of guys are playing for Texas. But, and then also you look at his outing versus LSU. He had one hell of an outing versus LSU. He got kind of that all the runs that he gave up and all the hits that he gave up were late in his outing after he's gone like 5 2/3.
5 2/3, two runs was his stat line.
He was 5-1. He had gone 5 innings, 1 out, and he had only allowed 2 hits to LSU, which is the number we were just talking about this before coming on air. Now this isn't updated numbers, but they are a for sure top 5 hitting team in the nation.
No question.
So this is not easy stuff to do, right? It's not like just, hey, he just played Missouri and let's just not work, like, you know, let's not think about this. One of the things that stands out to me about Ruger Riojas is the Texas baseball account. They always put out these by the numbers every week.
Yeah.
And every single week you go down to that 1-1 strike count. And it goes back to what we've talked about with Max Wiener and the emphasis that seems to be taken on counts, right? Like this pitching staff, they care more about counts. They put more thought into the pitches with counts on the line. On a 1-1 count, Ruger Riojas, 4 of the 5 weekends that they put out those stats, he's coming at 100% strike percentage.
Which is absurd. So
that means going from 1-1, you can walk to Vegas and place a ticket and say he's going to get to 1-2. And I'm putting my house on that thing, right? Because it's that sure of a bet. And I mean, that stuff cannot be ever taken for granted. Getting to a 1-2 count, it's a massive deal going from 1-2 versus 2-1. 2-1, now you're throwing a hitter's pitch. And it also goes to show, you look at the home runs that we've given up. We really have not given up a lot of home runs. We're one of the teams that, and we'll touch on this in a second with the Georgia matchup coming up. Man, this pitching staff, they're doing a very good job, and Ruger Riojas is one heck of a big part of it.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a more important pitch in baseball than a 1-1 pitch just because of the leverage, maybe the 3-2 pitch, but the leverage that having a 2-1 count versus a 1-2 count as a hitter gives you is pretty absurd. So having a 100% ability to get you that second strike is so important, and so something that you just don't see regularly. And that's why I'm glad that Texas does these stat profiles, because I'm not sure how many other programs are doing this, but I really am interested every week to look at them, because, you know, something like 70 knows,
and 70% strikes in the SEC when he's starting.
Exactly.
So throw strikes, like, trust your defense. And man, it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's just special.
That's the Schlossnagel way. He always brings up throwing strikes. And I continue that idea. A really good weekend from the bullpen, from Grubbs, from Flores, from Burns, from Volantis. All of them got in a game, and I think all of them had more than one inning pitch of solid pitching. Flores looked really good. Still, again, not really hitting the strikeouts you want, but enforcing weak contact is what you want. There are two pitchers on the staff that, you know, with the Georgia game coming up, still give you some question marks. I think Jared Spencer's one of them, because, you know, he's gotten to that Friday starter spot 3 times against the SEC, and it seems like when he gets that 6th inning, it starts to really crumble. That's what happened against Missouri. It's happened a little earlier against LSU, but against Mississippi State is when he showed a little bit of weakness when he got to that 5th, 6th inning. So that's going to be something that's pretty important, I think, when you go against Georgia, because getting your Friday pitcher rattled and beaten up that first game is going to be a hard way to recover. And it didn't happen against LSU. He didn't get beat up per se, but, you know, Texas lost that game, and it wasn't particularly close after he gave those 4 runs, I think, in the 3rd inning. And then Andre Duplantier, you know, I don't think he's a 12-6 ERA pitcher, but he's gotten himself into trouble early in all of his appearances. It feels like the last 4 or 5, and I don't know if he's injured, because he did have that, you know, the Tuesday game where he walked out because of injury, didn't even get a chance to pitch, but it seems like he's getting behind batters early on in counts and then isn't recovering well, forcing walks, having base hits gotten after that. So I don't feel bad about what Duplantier is doing, but if he's going to have to be a Saturday reliever, he's going to have to step it up at least a little bit. I don't know how you feel about those two.
The way that I look at this is, like, I mean, it's the walks, right? You just got to cut down on the walks. And I have full faith in Andre if he goes put and gets put out there. You look at the batting average numbers, right? Andre Duplantier is allowing a 250 batting average. That's less than Luke Harrison. Yeah. So it's not the hits, right? That's where his walk hit and pitch gets to be different. And at the end of the day, man, what's going to happen is he's going to come in and we're either going to get what we need or we're going to, you know, we'll stumble. We might stumble a little bit, but we'll have another guy come in. But I mean, he is still, when he's on, man, he's a really good arm. Like there was
stuff to hit
for people that don't remember, like Gage Bain was legit last year. And there was a point where Andre Duplantier was like, literally like people were talking about Andre Duplantier as if he weren't having the same, like his stats were like neck and neck with Gage Bain through the certain stretch towards the end of the year. So, I mean, this is a pitcher that really, he's got good stuff. He can certainly give you some good innings. And then also he gives you a lot of experience. And I, you know, it is what it is. We're kind of early on through the SEC play, right? So I'm willing to kind of overlook the walks, but if it continues, yeah, it'll kind of concern me a little bit.
Yeah, and maybe Will Mercer gets healthier. Maybe Thomas Burns can have a bigger role. There's ways, there's safety blankets around what Duplantier is doing. And Van Gage,
I think Will Mercer lost that job.
Well, he's lost the job, but is he going to be able to be healthy and come back?
Well, I mean, I'm saying even if he comes back 100%, I mean, how do you remove Dylan Blantis from that closer role?
True.
Also, that's another thing. 5 saves in the SEC as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
Through
6 out.
Through 2 series. Like,
yeah,
that's legit stuff right there.
Yeah. I mean, Volantis is – there's only so many great things you can say about him week to week, and he had a quiet performance, which was 2 scoreless innings with 4 strikeouts. So, yeah, great from him. And, yeah, Bain, man, if only he got that Diego Pavia ruling, how good this bullpen would look with another ace closer.
Yeah, this message goes out to Gage Bain, man. You know how I feel about you. They screwed you over, and I'm still hurt. I'm still hurt because you're right. Like this, that's where like that. If I'll tell you right now, if Gage Bain were on this team, I would say right now Ruger Riojas would not touch another high leverage inning ever.
Yeah,
right. You would immediately Dylan Volantis would fill that high leverage role, and you'd have Gage Bain going out there and getting you saves. It'd be that simple, right? The recipe's simple, but. Yeah, I don't get me started on Gage Bain.
Well, things are simple as always here around Texas, but things like real estate are not simple. And Laura Baker's going to tell you about how, well, that can be.
Hi, I want to tell you about Laura Baker. If you're looking for a new home in the 512 or even at this point, let's face it, 737 area code, there's only one number to call. That's Laura Baker at 512-784-0505. As a member of the elite Andy Allen team with Keller Williams, Laura has helped Longhorns find the home of their dreams in Central Texas. Just ask our resident sex symbol, Ian Boyd, who moved all the way from Michigan to Texas with Laura's help. Laura can help you find what you're looking for in the 512, the 737, or even parts of the 254 and the 210. Just, you know, give her a call at 512-784-0505. Her email is in the description as well as the rest of her contact details. She's a friend. Give her a call.
Thank you, Laura and Elsie, as always. And we are transitioning to this Georgia series, which it's 2 out of the first 4 series here in Austin, or 2 of the first 2 in Austin, 2 of the first 4 in the SEC play, are going up against some really absurdly good teams, this is maybe the way to put it. LSU first, which was just a team filled with MLB talent, and the Longhorns did well, 2 wins in that series. But Georgia might even be a different beast, especially offensively. Nash, just first impressions of this Georgia team, for those who maybe only follow the Longhorns and don't look around the SEC, what shows up when you were looking at this team on the tape?
They can hit the ball, like a lot. And this is not a go ahead and pull up the graphic, Homer. This is not like, so you look at their home runs and 79. Okay, well, they must play on a ballpark like Tennessee where the fence is like 2 feet away.
You were the Tennessee
ballpark. No. They play on a ballpark about the same size as the dish, if not bigger than the dish in certain areas. So for them to be hitting 79 home runs I don't care who you're facing at the, you know, on the mound. That stuff is impressive right there. That is elite level stuff. But you go and look throughout this entire graphic, man, and it shows you that this is an elite matchup that we're going to watch at home. And this is what we've been talking about this all year long with the SEC. We talked about this going into the LSU match. This is where we're supposed to be, right? This is where college baseball is. This is the best of the best in college baseball. And welcome to every single week in the SEC looking at stuff like this. Now, one thing that I want to point out with, I mean, Georgia's hitting a lot of home runs. Texas also doesn't – we don't give up home runs a lot.
Yep.
We're number 15th in the nation in limiting home runs. And you look at Georgia, they're 240 – they're ranked 242. So they do give up their fair share of home runs. And this is going to be – watching our pitchers go against their bats is going to be one of the more fun matchups we get to watch all year.
Yeah, and of course the home runs are going to be aplenty this weekend. But in 9 games in the SEC – 5 given up by the Longhorns is really manageable. That's a great number to have, and it's showing up on this graph. Georgia in SEC play 3 different hitters with 4 home runs. What's interesting about their roster is, you know, their top guys, Christian Adams, who's one of those 4 or one of those 3, and then Rylan Zaborowski, I think that's how you say his name, and then Robbie Burnett. These guys are all transfers. Georgia's probably the best portal team in the nation. They do that extremely well, and that's how they get a lot of their talent. And they just have people who are like 8-9 deep of players who can take you yard any pitch, any part of that bat. And that's going to be scary. 79 home runs this quick in the season. I don't feel like fans really can grasp just how absurd that is. I keep saying absurd. Bad day for my vocab. But it's really crazy how much they're hitting these home runs. But what really stands out about this graphic on the pitching side for Georgia is, you know, the opponent batting average is very good. Top 20 in the nation. But the walks, hits per innings pitch and the ERA are both not great numbers, you know, 52nd and 488. It's because their pitchers are pretty walk prone. They don't hit the strike zone very well. It's something that's exploitable for these Texas bats that you can be patient against Georgia because, you know, the transfer portal helps a lot with these hitters, but it's a little bit easier to find hitting in the portal than it is to find pitching. And I don't know if they have even quite what Texas has at pitching, which I wouldn't say is a top 2 to 3 SEC pitching roster. So the way that Texas is going to win these games is both teams are going to score a lot of runs. And of course, you know, I have to make the obvious, they're going to have to score more than Georgia, but it's going to be about having these long at-bats, getting these pitchers into rough counts, and then using the ability of Gasparino Flores to hit a ball out of the ballpark. It's going to be important this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I want to kind of go back to what you just said about the transfer portal, and this is kind of the ironic part. You look at Jared Spencer and Ruger Riojas, who came from the transfer portal, and it's like what we managed to do landing, and then also in how limited time that we did, because Georgia, they had all day in the portal. Right, they're skipping around, they're frolicking in the meadow, like, you know, like they're getting to sweet talk all the players, and they're getting to spend some time in the portal. Texas, we're sitting there on our hand, literally sitting on our hands, waiting for a potential coach to come out, and then we got our guys, and we're so it's kind of a little bit of an interesting thing, but yeah, this is really good pitching from Texas, elite stuff. That and this is where kind of Georgia has the chance to get kind of touched up. Is we have some really good hitting, and their pitching is kind of maybe not to the level that Texas is.
Yeah, and I believe Charlie Goldstein's the name of their Friday starter. I believe he's a Friday starter. He's a 5th year there for them, but 6.6 ERA for him is, you know, not quite what you'd expect from a Friday starter in the SEC. And I think that's where Texas, maybe we talked about Spencer needing to have a very big weekend already. And if he's going to outduel the Friday pitcher, and if we get 5 innings straight of him playing, pitching well, being ahead, ready for the win, you know, 4-2 ball game in favor of Texas after 5. I think in my head that Grubbs Volantis would outduel the rest of their bullpen, and that would be a win. But that might not be the formula. It may be one of these weekends where we're going to see Texas use 9, 10, 11 pitchers, because at some point a team like Georgia is going to get on you. They're gonna hit the ball out of the park. You make one, you know, pitch a little too close inside, a little meatier, and Zaborowski is going to hit you 450-foot bomb. So the strike zone is important for Schlossnagel, but this might be where it bites them, because they're going to test these Georgia hitters.
Sorry if I've seemed like distracted, because I just wanted to confirm something.
No, you're good.
I just want to be like dead on when I say this. Georgia right now is hitting 2.63333 repeating home runs per game. in 30 Jeez. Games. For people that are like, oh, that's just numbers, right? What does that mean? Okay, well, let's go back to the last time this happened, 1997, when bats were completely different. Hot bat era, right? You got LSU. This is one they call the gorilla ball, right? We're literally playing a gorilla ball team. Like, it's like you transported a team from the late 1990s and said, okay, you get to play with the same equipment and all that stuff. Here, go play some baseball, right? LSU has the record at 2.69 home runs per game. And then BYU is number two and from the 1988 team at 2.68. 1999 Missouri State, 2.53. And then you have Tennessee from last year, who or 2022, who like just obliterated the ball. They had a 2.39 home runs per game. I mean, like, this is just – this is not normal stuff that is coming to the dish. So we're going to see the ball fly out. And, I mean, I would actually be okay if they move the fences back to the original – you know, Dish Falk standards, because we need all the help we can get.
Yeah, seriously. That if the wind's in the favor on a Friday or Saturday, if you haven't been going to games at the Dish and you want some action, man, this is – if you want to show a friend who doesn't like baseball some fun baseball, this is going to be the weekend for it, because it's just going to be bomb after bomb. And you know, that Tennessee team is filled with guys who are already making their way up to the MLB. I'm an Nats fan. Trey Lipscomb on that 2022 team, he made a debut for us last year. He annihilated the ball back then. So it's pretty crazy that that's the comparison you're getting from this Georgia roster. And, you know, I think, Nash, when you're talking this weekend about what this Texas team has to do, and usually the goal for these series, let's win two out of three. You know, you're going to drop one to Georgia probably. But what's going to be an X factor, or what player is going to need to step up, in your opinion, to really make this a positive and an important weekend for Texas?
I mean, without knowing, you know, the severity of the injuries and, you know, who's going to be out, right? I would say, look, if we're missing Max Ballou, one guy that I think that we're going to need to have step up is either Jaden DePlantier or Matt Scott. Jaden DePlantier, what he's going to give you, he's going to give you a lot of experience out there in the outfield, right? He's going to, you know, he's been around the block in Texas, right? He's been here for a while, so he's, you know, he might have a little bit more experience, you know, in game situations and what all that has. Matt Scott, you want to talk about a guy that can obliterate the baseball, right? This is a guy that I am dying to see absolutely just, like, get a legit chance. And that's a guy that I'm really interested in seeing if we're going to be missing Max Ballou. I have no idea what's going on there. Cole Chamberlain, what he showed us, hey, that he gave us some legit – catcher.
Yes, he did.
People can say, oh, it was just Missouri. Fast guys are fast, right? And balls in the dirt are balls in the dirt. I don't care who's standing in the batter's box, right? A ball in the dirt's a ball in the dirt. So for him to block he did let one did get away from him, right? But that is what it is. It's as a catcher, you're not gonna, unless your name's Yadier Molina, you ain't gonna block every ball. Or really Buster Posey. Change that one. But it's just – he showed us enough defensively, and then offensively we already know. Like, he hasn't hit a home run yet, but we already know he has home run power. We saw it in the alumni game early on. And what he is he's a walking walk – like, he's a literal walk machine.
Yep.
So
– his on base is crazy, that number.
I'm not going to be happy not having a guy like a Ryland Galvan in the lineup if we have to miss Ryland Galvan. Again, no clue on how serious all this stuff is, but I'm at least okay with a guy like a Cole Chamberlain, and then at least in the case of like a Adrian Rodriguez, and I hate to, like, Adrian Rodriguez is one hell of a bat. Like we said all year long, you just don't take that bat in the lineup if you can have it in. Mm-hmm. And again, no clue what's going on there again, but that's where a guy, and maybe a Matt Scott can come into play. Right, if Jaquay Stewart's having at bats like he had last week, we're 100% fine at the DH spot.
And I think, like you said, with DePlantier and Scott in the outfield, a name we haven't talked about much, and we haven't seen much, is, you know, where's Easton Winfield? Has he lost the graces of the coaching staff?
I don't think he's lost the graces. I think it's more of just not wanting him to force. You know, I wouldn't want him to force anything. Right, like,
yeah,
obviously. He's kind of struggled, right? And not kind of. He has struggled. And I mean, like, this is where I think that saying, like, if he wasn't struggling, like, okay, now you're being disrespectful to the guy. Because you're saying that he can, like, him hitting 189 is not struggling. Yeah, no, he knows it. He knows he's struggling. And it is what it is, but that's where you just got to have a consistent, you just got to remain consistent. You got to have a consistent approach. Go out there. He's been hitting the balls well throughout the early on part of the season. So this is one of the struggling, this is one of the kind of the interesting parts. I would like for him to, you know, kind of almost glue to Kimball Schuessler and follow him, because Kimball had a lot of the same problems early on.
Yeah.
He was hitting the ball well. The ball just wasn't finding holes. So I don't want Easton Winfield to press, and I don't think the coaching staff is kind of following along that, along those lines, because this was in the fall one of our better hitters. And
yeah. One of the most hyped up transfers we had.
Yeah, like I'm just we were expecting like a lot of doubles from Easton Winfield, and just, you know, one of the highest batting average guys. And it reminds me a lot of a guy like Porter Brown. And, you know, we're at a point where, okay, we don't have to force him, right? Like we had to force the Porter Brown. We have options to go elsewhere. And when he gets it right, because baseball's a streaky thing, you're going to go on bad streaks and you're going to have good streaks. When he gets on his good streak, that's a special player that I'm excited to see.
Yeah, and I think for me, what's going to be important, of course, the guys who are replacing these players are going to be huge. And I think losing Ballou, like we mentioned a little bit, would be a big knock. I think that would be the one that would hurt the most.
I mean, that's a Golden Spikes finalist right there.
Like, exactly. And you don't – maybe if Winfield's not there, the outfield depth, like you said, Stu Plantier, who he's played out there, his more natural position is maybe in the middle of the infield. Scott, a true freshman, hasn't been able to play much. But it's these four other guys, you know, the core four starters – Schuessler, Flores, Mendoza, Gasparino. Like, can they continue the hot streaks they've been on? Because Mendoza's been the hero of consistency all year. Like you said, Flores and Gasparino went 8 home runs in the last 4 games combined or something like that. Schuessler's been hitting the ball really well recently. Can that maintain? Can those guys be the consistent hitters? Because if the other three of the top 7 hitters, it seems like, you know, I think 7 to 8 is kind of the number of the main guys. Tommy Farmer, you can also include into that. But if 3 of those guys are out, which, like we keep saying, we'll hear more. We'll keep talking about this one when we hear more news. But if they're not able to go, then those 4 guys are going to have to be able to hit, because Bourbon Farmer, you can't 100% be aware that they're going to have a top-tier game. And they aren't maybe the top 3-4 guys in your batting order. And then if Stewart and Chamberlain have to go out there, or someone like Scott or Duplantier, you can't be 100% sure that they're going to give you key contributions. So getting those 4 guys there is important to me, as well as, you know, Terrett Spencer being a part of this really elite rotation, if it can be.
The one thing I want to mention is I noticed this with Tommy Farmer. He is leading I don't think just the SEC, but leading in the nation in line drive percentage. Like, it's really? Like 62.5%.
I can believe that, yeah.
So this is just like, again, like a lot like Kimball Schuessler. And I think that, some, you know, a lot of what we talk about with Kimball Schuessler, we're going to see that consistency start to push through, because he's been hitting the ball well. All year long. It's now just starting to fall into the gaps.
And of course, as every Monday we do, we have rankings here for the Texas Longhorns. The team's been streaky, 8-1. Streaky is not the right word to do it. They've been on a hot streak, 8-1 in SEC play, only 3 losses on the year in 26 games. Homer, if you want to bring it up, Texas Longhorns, as we've been kind of clamoring for a little bit these last few weeks, a top 5 team in the nation, according to pretty much everyone, literally everyone. Baseball America has been high on Texas. For, you know, they drank that Kool-Aid after the first few weeks, and they have them at number 3. But D1 baseball guys, Kendall Rogers thinks Texas is a top 5 team. You can stop with the pitchforks and the birding and all that. Everywhere has Texas as an elite upper echelon team, a team that is here to host, is really an Omaha favorite at this point. And, you know, a loss to Georgia in the series wouldn't be too big of a knock. You know, it's another team that's going to be in the top 5. But Nash, does it really feel like the world is seeing how good this Texas team is? And are they a little late to it, you think?
I do think they're a little late to it. But, I mean, at the same time, I think that we did have to earn that. And we're going to have to earn to keep it. Like, we got some legit opponents coming up. We got Georgia coming up right now immediately. Texas State, they're going to – hey, I don't want to gloss just over Texas State. We might talk about that in a second. On a 3-game home losing streak right now. So not good stuff out there. But one thing that I also want to point out, too, is the Texas – you look at our losses. One of our losses is to number 7 – currently ranked number 7 LSU, and the other is to number 18 Louisville. right? And that was a close game. And then you also look, like, I know we said, you know, it was early week, so, like, early in the season, so let's not, like, put too much stock into this Ole Miss win. But, man, that Ole Miss win, winning 10-0 in seven innings over the currently ranked number 9 Ole Miss Rebels, I mean, that win just continues to look better and better and better, right?
Yeah.
So it's just this is really fun stuff that we're going to see from Texas. And if we're going to lose, it's to a good team.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And you know, that sometimes
and UTSA is also – they're not ranked, but they're a good, good mid-major.
And Texas has technically played 10 SEC games. The Ole Miss game didn't count because weird scheduling stuff and all that went on with these neutral field games. But, yeah, it's going to be one of the more underrated resume points for any team in the nation, because Ole Miss wasn't seen as that good, but they've been amazing in SEC play. And Texas looked by far the better team in that. So if you want to get kind of a litmus test of where Texas is at, they beat number 7 in a series. They really beat Ole Miss in that, who's number 9 in that one game. So it not only feels like Texas is the number 5 team, but we've been talking, as I think last week especially, that when you get to these rankings, when you get to the 4 or 5 teams, then after that, it takes a bit of a drop. Maybe you can include Clemson with the teams like Florida State, Georgia, Arkansas, Tennessee, Texas. But after that, you know, Texas beat LSU. Alabama struggled a little bit. Ole Miss is not a perfect team. They have 6 losses on the year. So it feels like Texas has maybe made their way into that grouping of the true elite teams. But like you said, Texas State's not going to be an easy game. This is their Super Bowl, as people love to say. You got Georgia this weekend. Kentucky has been a good team. You're going to Lexington. That's not going to be easy. And then Auburn, one of the better teams in the SEC. I think they're ranked, if I'm not mistaken. They're number 16, yeah. So.
And then also to the point about like the team that we got coming in, Georgia just beat the ever-loving crap out of Auburn. Right? Yeah. Like, so.
And Auburn's still the number 16 team.
This is
used to be number 11.
Yeah, I mean, but like this is going to be a very tough test. And then also at the same time, I really like if Texas wins 2 games or Georgia wins 2 games, it does not make me think that the other team is bad, or like even if one team gets swept, right? These are still 2 top 5 teams going at it. Like it is. These are just Goliaths going at each other right now.
Yeah, and also, if you guys are looking at this graphic closely, we've been talking about it a lot, but we're halfway done with the regular season, Nash. So week 7 has passed.
It's wild. It's wild.
Week 14 is going to be here much closer, less than 2 months away. So we keep saying this, you know, watch Texas baseball. I know not everyone who follows Inside Texas is the hugest baseball fans. You might not have gotten this far if you're not a huge baseball fan. But if you are, or if you just haven't been, if you've been casually, you've been watching our show, just getting the recaps of things, but you haven't been at the dish or watching the games, please do. It's a joy to watch this team. This has probably been one of my favorite Texas baseball teams since I've become a fan of this university. It's giving, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it's giving shades of teams that Ivan Melendez was on, you know, when he was becoming a Golden Spikes level player. So the Longhorns got a lot going on. We'll keep you updated of what's going to happen with these injuries. And of course, you know, for the best updates, $1 for 4 months here at Inside Texas. As soon as we hear something about these injuries from Blue Rodriguez and Galvan, which will probably happen on a media availability in midweek, you'll hear it first from Nash or I at Inside Texas.
Four quarters, a quarter a month for Arch Manning's first offseason as a Texas Longhorn.
There's so much going on here at Texas. So, yeah. Like we said, basketball is popping. We didn't even mention women's basketball. One of the best teams in the country. They're about to face off against TCU. Mm-hmm. The swim and dive teams won a national championship. Texas Athletics is in a great spot, and you should be along for the ride if you're not already subscribed to Inside Texas and watching Texas baseball closely. Nash, another great episode. Went a little long. This is one of our longer ones. So thank you for coming on. And any last words before you sign off?
I mean, sorry to Inside Texas on YouTube, because I mean, you're just gonna have to get used to these 45-minute episodes if Texas is gonna keep on winning.
Well, thank you as always to Laura Baker for Connor behind the scenes, Nash as well, and everyone at the Inside Texas team. I've been your host, Evan V, signing off for now. Thank you all for watching.
Welcome.